Mamma mia! This is Strong Style. This is In This Corner.
Audio bonus time on the ITC. In This Corner with Brian Campbell returns with a special NXT edition of the Pro Wrestling Podcast as we package a yellow and black dose of the one and only performance-enhancing audio, the Brian Campbell, in fact, the voice that you hear. Look, I'm going to tell you straight up, this is a special edition so hot, you simply can't touch this, along with a detailed State of the Union about NXT as a whole as we inch closer to that April 7th TakeOver New Orleans card live on the WWE Network. We've got a pair of great interviews to share your way. WWE executive, 14-time world champion, and NXT patriarch himself, Triple H, stops by to talk about the role both NXT and the Performance Center has in setting up this year's WrestleMania 34 card. We will also chat with the king of audio, Strong Style, that voice you heard off the top, the one and only Mauro Ranallo, the voice of NXT, on bringing his signature bombastic style to WWE's third brand, along with detailed look back at his journey from SmackDown over to NXT and why he has been so public in his battles as an advocate for mental health. This is inspiring, emotional, exciting stuff. The bipolar rock and roller bringing it to you in an interview you simply won't want to miss. And with me to help pass out a bit of that audio magic. Oh, yeah. How good is that sound? The once crooked judge who now sentences only death sentences for bad booking and storylines. It's the Silver King, Adam Silverstein.
And we have ourselves, BC, quite a damn show today.
Yeah, you always want to be careful of overselling, but we can oversell this one. This is we got so much good NXT stuff that it was only fitting to do its own episode. You know, as we inch closer with this brand being so red hot, as we get closer to Mania season, but these two specific chats to go into such deep detail about different sides of the ball, if you will, at NXT. It's a great time to be alive. Great time for that brand. Great time to be a listener of this show. The Booker himself, the Silver King, getting up some good stuff here.
You know, it's interesting because we always say every week when we do the rundown, mostly you do the rundown for our shows, hey, let's try to talk as much NXT as we can. But for both good reasons and for bad reasons, we often don't get around to it, not because we don't want to. I try to force as much NXT on this show as possible, but just so much happens on main roster, quote unquote, WWE in a given week. 3 hours of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, there's 205 Live stuff happening. And then, you know, some of our friends and other wrestling brands as well. So it's just difficult to get to. I think it's extremely good that we are taking this time to preview NXT as a whole. Obviously, we will preview NXT TakeOver New Orleans specifically on our Wednesday show before WrestleMania. But it is nice to do a State of NXT overview to see where this brand is right now.
And, you know, it's something we're going to get into with Mauro, but I've said it many weeks in a row on this podcast, months going back, that, you know, it's as good a time for the NXT brand as it's been since that glory period. That glory period I always talk about is the end run of 2014 through 2015, coincided when I personally really got into the brand. But I think that stress holds up for the best time of creativity, of depth to the roster. Good thing, and, you know, Triple H likes to say it himself, is NXT proves that it can continually reload. And I think a year ago at this time, Adam, we did talk about, look, they are in a rebuilding process. It's not that deep of a roster. They do need to reload. They do need some star power to go on to go sell different arenas around the country on their road tours. And I think we are back to that point, and it certainly has coincided with Mauro's voice being added to it, perfect storm or not, but I think he certainly raised the rent. And now you have us heading into a TakeOver weekend where, like, it's not hyperbole. You could almost care more about the TakeOver card if you're a serious fan as you could Mania, even though you'd certainly get different things from both sides.
You do. And, you know, we went to both last year in Orlando, and there's no question to me that the crowd at NXT shows, especially TakeOvers and especially on WrestleMania weekends, you need to be there. Like, WrestleMania is special, right? It's a 6-8 hour event, however long it is these days. I forget, 6.5 hours. And it's special and it's fun, and everyone there has that same mindset of what they're ready to go through with you, right? But when you're in NXT, in that crowd, it's the passionate of the most passionate, right? It's independent wrestling inside of WWE, and it's just special. And that kind of leads me into the first topic I'd like to hit here, BC. There's been different eras of NXT. There was the era before the WWE Network, where you had guys that eventually made up the Shield, maybe running the show a little bit, particularly Seth Rollins as the leader. And then you have the start of the WWE Network era, where you had Neville and Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, and then eventually the introduction of Finn Balor, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Samoa Joe as well. And now this new era, where basically NXT's women's roster and a large part of its men's main event roster have been taken away up to the main roster. And that's really what we're seeing at WrestleMania this year. So this current generation of NXT, how do you think it stacks up to those other ones I just mentioned? And do you think in some way it could be the best?
All of the above, yes. But it depends on the idea of becoming the best. I think you have to stay together for a long time. And I'm never one who is pushing people out the front door of NXT, sometimes because you can get a feeling like they're not going to be handled and booked the right way on the main roster compared to NXT, but sometimes because you want some stability in the brand. And that's what made that late 2014, early 2015 stretch so good, when you had Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, some of those names you mentioned, Finn Balor, even before Shinsuke came there, and you packaged those along with some fun talent like Lucha Dragons, Tyler Breeze, those type, with how strong and deep that women's division was. And I mean, when you're going to make a Mount Rushmore of NXT all-timers who made NXT what it is today, I mean, you can carve out, you can almost give all four of those to the four horsewomen. Seriously, that impact was so strong then that it forced WWE's hand to book their entire women's division more seriously. So you can't understate that. This generation now, it's hard to say it's as talented or as deep, but they really work as a cohesive unit very well. And I think some of these shows have overachieved the last few times. So if they can stay together, and I don't think WWE needs to rush up many or any of these. I mean, look, there's already a logjam on the main roster. There's already guys we really love, you know, the Dolph Ziggler types, who we have to sit on here and complain aren't getting the shine because there's just not enough spots anyway. If this current group, and it's certainly backed by guys like Aleister Black, Cien Almas, Velveteen Dream, Undisputed Era, and some of those new names coming in, the EC3s, the Ricochets, if they can have this big of an impact, this core group can be there. Yes, it's starting to give me those feels, Adam, that it could end up being, until the next wave, the definitive wave in NXT history. They have to do some more, right? But the quality of the last few takeovers is so consistently strong. And I don't judge it just by that. Sometimes I judge it by the feel. 2015 had a feel to it that they haven't had again. Now you're getting that feel where everyone's bought in together. The product is speaking the same language, if you will. Everyone's equal, it's more or less, and on the same level. I am that fired up that this could exceed that.
See, that's kind of how I feel. I think coming out of the last takeover, seeing Nakamura's elevation, eventually Bobby Roode had the title for an extremely long time, get elevated. I thought there was a hole in the main event picture of NXT, both men and women, with Asuka leaving it as well. And Ember Moon's fine, right? And we like Nikki Cross, but they weren't necessarily getting the shine that we wanted, in large part because Asuka was there dominating and needed to continue her winning streak, needed to keep her title. And we know how that transpired. So I don't think NXT's depth is necessarily the strongest it's ever been right now because of that. I don't think main event-wise, as much as I really like Almas and as much as I really like Gargano and Ciampa and Ember Moon, you know, and Shayna Baszler as well, who we failed to mention, as much as I like all of them, the depth of the main event picture in NXT for me is not what it had been. And a lot of that really has to do with, well, we had Finn Balor and Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura and Kevin Owens, you know. These are not no ones. You know, these are big time names that were really cutting their teeth in NXT on their way to the main roster. For me, it's more this. I think depth top to bottom, there's a hope. And you see guys like Velveteen Dream, EC3, who I'm personally not extremely familiar with, but Adam Cole, Ricochet, even guys like Lars Sullivan and Killian Dane. And you say, you know what? In 6 months, in 9 months, this is going to be incredible. The one thing I think NXT is doing better than it ever has before is storytelling. And I say that with two people in particular, Andrade Cien Almas and Johnny Gargano.
No question about it. And you know, are they the in their own way sort of the Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens of just, you know, 3 years ago, right? They're sort of filling that same role in a lot of ways. And I think the collective theme from that last good era, great era, and this one is that they're going around and picking out those guys on the independent scene who are really strong and either haven't really gotten to that next level of public consciousness, mix them with a couple veterans of the indie scene, and that's the product you get. So it's not, it makes it feel like NXT is not AAA. It makes it feel more like a destination. And that's when NXT is at its best. But the core is that storytelling, like you're saying, and it giving you those feels about, I guess, caring about what's really happening here and allowing you to suspend that disbelief and not being all about just name, t-shirt sale. It just being more about the actual, what we love about this. It's really raw and bare bones in that element. It strips down the commercials and the name plugs, and it's really just all about what it should be. And, you know, you could sidebar debate the debates we have regularly on the show. Is it the Triple H influence? You know, what is Triple H versus Vince, main roster versus NXT? What does that mean? But when you have these long range stories to get us to care this much, and when certain guys are stepping up to the 4.5, 5-star match level where you didn't necessarily see it coming. Look, the original run of Cien Almas in NXT didn't blow me away, right? I thought he was a cool character. I even bought the t-shirt at him. I didn't think there was a 5-star match guy, you know, like hiding in, was there, I didn't think there was a cape hiding underneath that t-shirt that he walked into the ring with. Like, there's that, these guys are coming out on that level and showing you what they really have, and that's what NXT affords them that the main roster doesn't, and a lot of times that's a big part of the difference.
Yeah, they actually have opportunities to develop, and you see it in front of your eyes. And what's always interesting to me, and I've gone back because I did not watch, I watched the NXT specials, but I did not watch the NXT weekly television show when it first started on WWE Network. So I've gone back and seen kind of the transformation of some of these characters. And it's crazy how different people are from when you first see them and they have their first matches in NXT. And then maybe they disappear for 2 tapings. So they're off for 2 months and they come back and you're like, whoa, this is a fully formed character. He's ready to go. Even someone like Finn Balor, right, Prince Devitt, when he started, he was just himself, and there was nothing really special to him. You said, wow, this guy's a really athletic dude, and he was helping Hideo Itami, you know, who came in as Kenta. They were a tag team for a short period of time, and then all of a sudden, they gave him the demon gimmick, and you said, whoa, this guy is the real deal, if you did not know it already.
But they did, save the demon gimmick, though, for when it mattered, and that was a big part of it, I think, early on to get you excited about that.
Kentucky Long Rifle.
Whoa, what's going on here?
Looks like we have some surprise DM slides. Let's start with Jax Browner at Jax Browner. BC, does the build to Gargano Ciampa, this is what I was just talking about, does it give you Mega Powers Explode type feels? Obviously, they don't have the superstar name recognition, but the build to this match has been almost a year in the making.
It doesn't, and I don't say that as a negative. And I know there's always that feeling when two friends break up to flash back to that. I think Cody Kenny is a little more Mega Powers Explode in the way that thing has been set up. This doesn't, but that's fine. This feels a little bit more raw, a little bit more greedy. I, you know, jealousy is always a theme when partners break up, but I didn't feel this was the same Hogan Savage jealousy. I felt this was totally different because these guys came up and were a tag team together. They weren't, you know, thrown together at a certain point and then jealous of each other's fame. I mean, this might have a little bit more barbershop window rockers, Jannetty Michaels, than Hogan Savage to that end. But while the comparison's not perfect, the impact is, and it's just like, I don't think they have a misstep in this, in the way they're telling the story, the way that they weave this storyline through the Gargano Cien Almas feud, right? Which ended with that 5-star match at TakeOver Philadelphia to have the t-shirt on Zelina Vega throwing it in a couple times. I mean, like, it's just so brilliant because they connect the dots and they take you on that journey, and the storylines don't change or end 1 week and start up again the next week on Raw for no reason. And I know we're always going to point back to that backbone, but this is so well done that whatever it looks like at TakeOver, under any setting that it's going to be, we got to have it. We need it. We want it. I love it. I love it. And when these two guys first came up as a tag team, look, I knew about them, but it wasn't like I'm like, these guys are going to be great as singles, you know, or anything like that. But talk about overachieving and just showing you what you can really do. It's when NXT affords you that. These guys have really got me to care.
So I'm actually with Jax, and it's for the reason that you just said. The reason this is such a good storyline and such a good angle is because they took 2 year-long storylines, weaved them together at the connection point with Almas being completely down in the dumps, you know, unable to live up to expectations, partying, you know, not focusing on wrestling. Then Zelina Vega comes in, saves him, brings him up to it. Her interference, I guess, with the t-shirt cost Gargano that match. It just, it's every little pinpoint dot forming together on two storylines that diverge and have now split apart with Aleister Black taking on Cien Almas in the main event of NXT TakeOver New Orleans. For me, that's why it's so good. Mega powers explode. Yeah. Probably greatest angle, greatest friend breakup of all time. It's tough to compare anything to that, especially in NXT with, you know, these guys who neither of them, it's not like they were world champions or anything like that. You know, they're still getting to that level, but there's no question to me that something special is what's happening in this particular feud. And I would say out of every match on every show in New Orleans, I don't know that there's one that the collective wrestling world is looking more forward to than Gargano Ciampa.
And by the way, and I talk about this Cruiserweight Classic, how much I love it all the time, and we're going to talk about it today with Mauro, of course, who was the voice of that. But Adam, just go back and watch Gargano versus Ciampa from the Cruiserweight Classic tournament when they were a team, and it was a great storyline at the time. They're a team, but they want to win the Cruiserweight Classic so bad that they're going to go against each other. And talk about giving you teases. I want to do a pay-per-view rewind on that match right now just to show you the little teases of what this feud now is that, you know, kind of formed and started back then.
All right, next one coming in from Gerald Berry. He says, BC, does it make more sense for NXT to hitch its wagon to Velveteen Dream or Ricochet? I find it interesting that those are the only two names he gave us as options. So use those two as options. You can't pick Adam Cole. You can't pick Aleister Black, Killian Dane, anyone else. Is it Dream or Ricochet for you that they should hitch their ride to right now?
Both. I mean, is that an option?
No, you have to pick. You can't do that.
All right, certainly. Look, it's so even. It really is.
I think there's a correct answer.
Dream's only 22, right? So at one half of you is like, don't rush him to the main roster, you know? But the other half is like, I've never seen a guy so young, so understanding of his character, so ready right now to do anything. I feel like he could do things in NXT and the main roster, knowing the differences in the booking and the style. Ricochet, Adam, look, I can't pick. I literally can't pick because they're kind of the same person in the one sense that I don't think there's a ceiling for either of them. I don't think one guy, like when I compare Aleister Black and Velveteen Dream, it's a little bit different. I think Dream's got the larger ceiling, Black more ready for the main roster right now. With Ricochet and Dream, come on, sort that out. Tell me there's anything that, like, you can't go wrong either way.
So he's talking about hitching its wagon to now. And now in 2018, you have Ricochet, who's been in this business. He's a veteran, 29 years old, almost 30. You have Velveteen Dream, who's 22 years old and still really learning the business. I'm not saying that age should keep anyone down. I don't believe that. I think if you're ready to go, you're ready to go. If you're 18 years old and you're ready to play in the NBA, you should not have to wait 3 years or 1 year, I'm sorry, which is the current rule. You shouldn't have to wait 1 year and feign like you care about college basketball just to go, you know, leave after playing a couple games and play in the NBA. So I don't believe that. But I think you have a guy who's experienced and capable in Ricochet, who right now, whether they want to give the spoiler alert NXT North American title to in this ladder match at NXT TakeOver New Orleans, if they want to give him that, great. I think what they need to do with Velveteen Dream, in my opinion, is you set up a 2-year plan and you say, you're going to be in NXT for 2 years, period. You're not going to go up to the main roster, but we are going to set up storylines and rivalries for you to build you up to this point that you're going to be so damn over that when you hit the main roster, you're an immediate mid-carder, you're an immediate potential main eventer, and you don't have to worry about working your way up because you're already going to have done it. Yeah. That's how I would handle it.
And what's interesting is we talk a lot about Triple H handles him so well, but Vince could change and ruin him. I feel like Dream's gimmick is so good and his understanding of his gimmick is so good that it's almost a perfect Vince, like, toy to play with, right? Dream is like the perfect Vince toy where I'd be like, yeah, go ahead, Vince. I'd love to see what you could do. Get a little gold dust type stuff in there. Get a little, you know, other, like, this guy's, it's just unbelievable.
But do you think he can be a world champion with his current gimmick?
Yes, because sometimes guys are really good in a lot of categories, but one is better. Even Seth Rollins. I love Seth Rollins. Love him as a heel, too. But Adam, he's a better wrestler than he is a character. Like, that's the truth, right? Debate me all you want. I feel like Dream is like, I mean, you want to talk about potential as a athlete and performer, it's completely untapped, but it's really just dynamic. It's equal with the character. So yeah, this guy could, I know you could say this about anyone that we love now on the main roster. If we got them when they were 22, maybe we'd say the same thing, but I don't think any of those guys, whether they were in Ring of Honor at the time or in the Indies, were as polished as Dream is in every single way.
One thing I will say about him is, I don't know if you feel the same way. I knew on Tough Enough. Like when I saw him on Tough Enough, I said, this guy should win number one, which he should have. But I said, they can't let this guy go. He needs to be part of WWE. He's made for this business.
See, I didn't
feel the same way.
I didn't. I saw athletic potential. I didn't see him the confidence, the potential, and the character. You know what I mean? And wow, great Tough Enough reference. That was the last time when Hogan was part of the family. So we can reminisce those days, right? But it'd be nice to go back and look at the roster and see that there's like nobody left, right? Basically,
yeah. All right, and our last one, our last DM slide from Blake Molina at Blake Mo.
Oh,
I think
Blake
there's
Mo,
two underscores after that. Yeah, he's making it on. And this was a last-minute request for NXT DM slides, too, so they all jumped on real quick. BC, which main roster talent would thrive the most if they were sent to NXT? We always talk about this. We always hear about it. Triple H has said in the past on this show, you know, there will be opportunities in the future for that to happen. It truly just has not. His pick would be Dolph Ziggler. He thinks he could be the heel that NXT needs long term.
That's certainly a fantastic answer, and even beyond the key heel, just the fact that on that setting where you're allowed to seemingly chase 5-star matches a little bit better than seemingly the main roster setup, I just feel like he's gonna have one classic after another. And even if he was set up, even if he did the same thing that he does on the main roster, which is shine up guys and make them look great, he would be working with the top guy every single time down there in NXT, and everyone would be elevated. So that's a perfect answer, but I almost don't want to see him go down. But yes, but at the same time, I want to see NXT in a place where it's not considered a step down, where it's considered an alternative. This is what we want. No one's really done it except for Zack Ryder. Not really. It's hard to think of one choice in that category because there's so many guys like a Ty Dillinger that I just wish they never came up. I wish they would have just stayed as long-term guys in that spot. Do I have one in particular? I mean, you know, I would have said Sami Zayn for a long time before he finally got the shine he's getting now as a heel in a main event run, which I certainly didn't see coming. And it would be tired to throw out like a Cesaro and rebuild him up into a single star because I think he's sort of plateaued. I'd love to see a few of those 205 guys get a good run at an NXT title and that style of push. But I don't know if I really have one specific. You got a guy that's eating at you?
I mean, the answer for me would be Dolph. And it's just too obvious because the only way it seems like he's going to get what he deserves, and what he deserves is to be someone who holds the world title, is in the main event, and gets time both on the mic and in the ring to win matches and put on great matches and promos. It's him. But I don't know how important it is to him anymore. I think we're at a point with Dolph where fans almost care more than he does. He cares about being in things that matter and not just being used to put other people over and, you know, and things like that. And that was part of him kayfabe walking out and also real life, like negotiating his new contract. But he signed a new contract with WWE seemingly under the guise that he's not necessarily going to be a main eventer and have a title run now. Maybe after WrestleMania, superstar shakeup, maybe he will get an opportunity and we'll see how things shake out. Maybe AJ Styles does go to Raw, Nakamura is the champion and he needs a heel to work off. And all of a sudden Dolph Ziggler's right there in the main event for a couple months. We don't know that, but I would say that if you bring him into NXT, especially now when after Almas and after Black, I don't necessarily know that there's a true main event title holder on that roster today. I mean, Gargano could do it, obviously, and there's other guys who could do it.
Cole could do it.
But I'm just saying Ziggler's ready. Like,
sure.
Ziggler's ready in the same way Bobby Roode was ready, Finn Balor, Samoa Joe. And that's why I think he could benefit.
And that's a strong look. And I could have given you Gallows and Anderson. There's a lot of guys on a Gallows and Anderson level who are underused that I'd say, go put them on NXT and take away the rules and let them go out and cut great, funny promos. You know, there's certainly a lot of those guys, but Ziggler is the top answer, no question. All right, Adam, shout out to our listeners for dropping in the questions on this NXT special edition, but let's go right to the voice of NXT. Let's talk to Mauro Ranallo himself. It's an interview I think you guys are going to love. Enjoy. The voice of NXT, Mauro Ranallo. Mauro, I got to start. At NXT TakeOver New Orleans, Saturday, April 7th, the WWE Network. Because, look, it's a show, if we're honest, and many quote-unquote smart fans, including the two hosts of this show, will tell you, we get as excited for that as WrestleMania, in some cases more. And that's a shoot, brother, as they say. But you sign on to be the voice of NXT last June, and the 9 months that followed, which culminates in this takeover card, I mean, look, for longtime NXT fans, this is about as good as the brand has been, at least to go back to that 2005 run with that run of superstars they had right there. I don't think it's a coincidence that Moro joins the team and we get that red hot booking, but talk to us on how fun and wild this ride has been leading up to New Orleans for you.
I don't think it's a coincidence either. I'm just kidding. I have been blessed in so many ways over the years, Brian. And in fact, I remember when I finally realized my lifelong dream of joining WWE with SmackDown as it made its move to the USA Network. And that coincided with the move of the, you know, the likes of AJ Styles, Carl Anderson, and Doc Gallows, whom I had covered when I was calling New Japan Pro Wrestling. So I'm always, I've often been called the Forrest Gump of combat sports broadcasting, because I always find myself a part of these huge chapters in combat sports history. And for me to now be the voice of NXT along with my broadcast partners, Nigel McGuinness and Percy Watson, I couldn't ask for a better fit. And for it to culminate with the roster that we have at this time, that you will see in all its glory on Saturday, April 7th in New Orleans as part of WrestleMania weekend. I could not ask for more. And as someone who has always been a fan of the work rate and someone who has always studied the nuances of what makes sports entertainment the unique breed of entertainment that it is, NXT is really the fits like the proverbial glove.
And, you know, you mentioned the SmackDown Live exit last year was heavily publicized, but to transition to NXT, it just feels like you were born for this brand. So why is this a better fit for you overall?
I think there's a variety of factors, and some you've already kind of alluded to. I am very blessed to be the voice of many major combat sports, whether it's Showtime Championship Boxing, whether it's Bellator MMA or kickboxing, whether it's other voiceover opportunities or other hosting opportunities. For me, the schedule that I was leading throughout 2016 into 2017, it was taking a toll not only on my physical health, but my mental health as well. And as we know, the WWE brand goes strong 52 weeks a year. And I have to take my hat off to not only the superstars who tell their stories in the ring and are the source of entertainment, but everybody from the announcers to the incredible crew backstage that are on the road 52 consecutive weeks. I was able to do it for 1 year. And the fact that, you know, for many of those weeks, I was also on the road during the weekend with my other jobs in combat sports, it was just proving to be too much. So the fact that WWE and especially, Vince McMahon, Triple H, and Michael Cole were able to give me this opportunity with NXT, which, as you know, we tape once a month, usually in Orlando at Full Sail University, and then have these periodic takeover specials. It just was a better fit for me overall. And the fact that they allowed me to continue my dream of calling sports entertainment at the highest level, I can't say enough good things about the powers that be in WWE, who have not only backed me in NXT, but have also been huge supporters of my advocacy for mental health. So really, it was a personal choice based on the lifestyle that I lead. But honestly, and, you know, we joke about this sometimes, Triple H and Michael Cole and I, that in the beginning, you know, I even said when they first approached me about working with WWE, is it for NXT? Because I always knew that NXT was the little brand that could. And while it began as a developmental company, we now know that it is the third brand under the WWE banner, with all due respect to SmackDown and Raw and WrestleMania, the showcase of the Immortals. For me, it's the blend of the young, up-and-coming, hungry athletes, along with the inspiring stories of guys who maybe thought they would never make it to the promised land in WWE, and now have that opportunity under the NXT umbrella to not only continue to hone their skills, but prepare themselves for an opportunity to go live on Monday or Tuesday nights on the sure. USA Network. And I'm not saying, you know, that I may never be back, you know, on a Monday or Tuesday night down the road. But if my epitaph reads the voice of NXT, then I'll be extremely happy, because it is something that puts the sports in sports entertainment. And yes, character, you know, building is incredibly important. Telling stories is incredibly important. The art of the promo. But man, for, you know, when it, for bell to bell action, I put the NXT brand up against any other sports entertainment brand that exists today.
You know, Mauro, this is Adam. I'm Brian's co-host here. And I did not get a lot of sleep last night, but just talking to you, you're in a different state. You're on the phone. It's like a shot of coffee. It's some adrenaline in my body. I now understand why it works so well, how you translate on television so well. And you mentioned sports entertainment a couple times. To me, you are what sports entertainment is about, because you know the sport, you care about the maneuvers, you like telling fans what they are, and, you know, how they work and how they don't. But you also make so many tremendous pop culture references and metaphors throughout your calls. What kind of preparation goes into that, or is it just totally off the cuff?
You know, it's an amalgam. I truly believe that the best form of off the cuff, the best form of improvisation, is preparation. You prepare for certain scenarios, and for me, preparation has been the buzzword throughout my life. I was one of these kids who, you know, began to read out loud probably way earlier than I should have been. And I've always been interested in the English language. I've always been interested in stories. I was always a voracious reader. And so I do have a bit of an eclectic taste when it comes to, you know, pop culture and music and entertainment. And I realize as a young child, I mean, I loved sports. I loved movies. I loved music. So pro wrestling or sports entertainment is that one area where you get all of it in a narrative, where you are able to thread certain references or certain areas of other parts of life that can bring maybe not the hardest core fan into the storyline, or make a reference just to show, you know what, we are paying attention. And sports entertainment has always been a microcosm of what is going on in society anyways. And that's why, for me, I was a radio disc jockey, nightclub DJ, talk show host. I've done everything there is to do in broadcasting, and I bring that kind of attitude and that kind of energy and that kind of preparation to sports entertainment. And again, do I always hit it on the target? Do I always knock it out of the park? No, but I always challenge myself, because at the end of the day, we see, you know, like anything else, any sport, whether it's baseball, hockey, football, soccer, we get what the rules are. We can anticipate what should happen based on storylines and scouting reports and injury reports. And for me, sports entertainment is entertainment, and it's sports. So not only am I calling the moves, not only am I trying to get you emotionally invested into the character and into the action you're seeing, but yeah, I'm trying to entertain as well. And I don't apologize for that. And there's a reason I believe that I've reached the heights of the success that I have, is because I never wanted to be the next anybody. I've always prided myself on being the first me, love it or loathe it. And so there's, of course, in the social media age, you know, you get instant feedback. And yeah, I've got my fair share of Twitter troglodytes, and I don't always feel good maybe about certain things that I've said. But that is the beauty of what we do, my friends. And especially when I was doing SmackDown and when I do other live events, it's, you know, you're walking that tightrope and there's no net, there's no second take. And so for me, it's all about being prepared for any specific scenario that I anticipate. And when I'm watching tape to study, or when I'm, you know, mining the internet or going over my past notes, I'm always trying to come up with a fresh spin on the same thing. So whether it's taking a cliche and tweaking it, or trying to incorporate something that the whole world is talking about, and you see it, you know, on SportsCenter, you see it in other walks of life, and WWE openly embraces that. They want you to be hip. They want you to know what's going on in the rest of the world. And sure. And so I'm very grateful that I get to be me on NXT, and I'm glad that for the most part people seem to enjoy it.
All right, Mauro, I'm gonna embarrass you and puff you up here. We talk about your passionate style, and maybe this, you know, this NXT brand is like the perfect marriage. the 2016 Cruiserweight Classic, recorded in the same arena there, Full Sail, is something I think is going to age like a fine wine. It's something I think wrestling fans right now, even those that watched it, may not even realize how great it was. And years from now, we'll look back and sort of treasure this. And I think there's a semifinal matchup in there. TJ Perkins, Kota Ibushi. That's my favorite WWE match of the last 5 years, at least, that I think was so great, Moro, because of that perfect storm of some of the best commentary I've ever heard with you and Daniel Bryan on that call, and a crowd like I've never sort of felt through my TV screen. And look, this wasn't sports entertainment. This wasn't even pro wrestling. It kind of came across as a real fight with two athletes fighting to keep their careers alive. And we do a pay-per-view rewind segment on this show where we did that match and we played some Moro sound drops. And I just want to let the listeners hear one more time, one quick drop of the passion coming out of this finish. Moro, I got tiny tears and goosebumps forming, all right? This is still real to me, damn it. I mean, come on, talk to me about the CWC. That's the art form at its highest right there.
Well, thank you very much, first of all, Brian. And I'm not, you know, I'm a straight shooter. I don't BS, I don't lie. And to me, you know, as and I sometimes with family and friends, they go, let's go through all of the fights that you've called and all of the matches over the years and see what stands out. And honestly, you can fill volumes. It's just the way it is. I am totally blessed. It's nothing to do with me. I was able to climb and scratch and claw and be at the right place at the right time and have people like Boss Wooten and David Dinkins and Steven Espinosa and Scott Coker and so many other people. And it all began with Al Tomko in 1986 in Vancouver, my hometown at All-Star Wrestling. But the Cruiserweight Classic, getting the opportunity to work with one of my favorite performers of all time, someone who I used to watch do his trade in front of 100, 150 people at the Bridgeview Hall in Surrey, British Columbia, when he was a nomadic indie warrior, that being, of course, Daniel Bryan, and knowing how full, you know, everything has now come full circle. But the passion that he has for his craft in the ring is the passion I have for my craft as a broadcaster. So together, it was an incredible a connection, and that tournament, scouring the globe for 32 of the best non-signed talents to big contracts or people who were maybe getting their first crack at real international exposure. It was like being in Japan for Pride Fighting Championships and the legendary tournaments that I called there. And I think I maybe take it for granted, Brian, but when I'm sitting at ringside, whether it is for boxing, whether it's MMA, whether it's sports entertainment or anything, it is real to me, damn it. And everything I do, I approach like this is the most important thing that is going on at this moment. I don't care if it's the, you know, so-called curtain jerker opening match or if it is the, you know, AJ Styles, John Cena classic from the Royal Rumble 2017 and that Cruiserweight Classic. You know, you mentioned the match between TJ Perkins and Kota Ibushi. For me, I still go back to the meeting between Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, where little did we know at the time, you know, that hard-hitting battle between the DIY tag team at the time, the way they tore into each other in that tournament, well, it was planting the seeds for what right now I think is the hottest rivalry in sports entertainment and one that, you know, is just coming to a boil now in NXT, but there were so many outstanding performances. So for me, the Cruiserweight Classic, it really, I think, was my real introduction to a much larger sports entertainment fan base. And obviously, it served me well in getting the opportunity then to bring SmackDown live to the USA Network. But yeah, it will always have a special place in my heart. And mainly, again, for getting the opportunity to work with Daniel Bryan, who I cannot say good enough things about. And I'm emotional thinking about the fact that he gets to once again, you know, live his dreams. Sure. Because he's an encyclopedia and he, I mean, does anyone connect with an audience like Daniel Bryan? So for a variety of reasons, the Cruiserweight Classic will always be incredibly special to me, my man.
So, Mauro, you mentioned, obviously, you've been watching wrestling since you were a child, and certainly as a professional, as an adult, you've called New Japan Pro Wrestling, WWE, quote-unquote, main roster, and now NXT. With all the guys that you're watching and calling, you know, you say you tape about a month of shows at a given time right now, who is it? I'm asking you to put your scout hat on here. Who is it that is truly, truly impressing you in NXT that you think has just such a massive career ahead of him or her?
To borrow a word from the aforementioned Daniel Bryan, yes. No, all right, I will not be diplomatic. There are so many, literally, the pipeline that has been put in place by the and that's the other thing. I will answer the question, but I want to go off on a quick tangent here.
Sure.
About the brain trust in NXT with Triple H, with the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels, with William Regal, Terry Taylor, Steve Corino, Dave Taylor. There are so many. Michael Hayes. I mean, I know I'm not mentioning everyone, but I'm just telling you the amount of experience, knowledge, and expertise that goes into the NXT tapings. Obviously, like WWE, you know, the brands Raw and SmackDown, but it just seems like a throwback to me of what we all fell in love with when we first saw sports entertainment. And so for me, you see it in the locker room. And again, I was a part of the SmackDown roster for a year, and those, you know, the very best, you know, John Cena got to pick his brain, AJ Styles, of course, and so many other, The Miz, who was he blew my mind, actually. You hear all these different stories as you know, come to a new company and everything else, but The Miz, not only a tireless worker, not only someone who would do anything for the company, but someone who, because of injuries and what have you, helped carry SmackDown that year. Dolph Ziggler. I mean, there's so many amazing talents. I think probably the most talented roster WWE has ever seen, but the future is incredibly bright because of the likes of an Andrade Cien Almas, who maybe at one time was in the crossroads wondering whether, you know, was WWE and NXT a good fit for him. He was a little listless, maybe resting on the laurels that he'd achieved in Mexico. But you put him together with Zelina Vega, and you see what he and Johnny Gargano were able to do,
yes,
including one of the greatest matches I've ever been a part of at NXT TakeOver Philadelphia. So those two, I think, are destined for greatness, whether it's on Raw or SmackDown. Aleister Black, a unique character, enigmatic, and yet has that background in the martial arts. And I once talked to Samoa Joe, another superstar who, of course, went through NXT before making it to Monday Night Raw, and on another show that I used to do, and I asked him about the future of sports entertainment. This is going back a few years now, and we see it, and I think NXT really represents that, where we have a collision of different styles that are based in shoot techniques. Mixed martial arts has had a huge impact on sports entertainment, and so NXT, guys like Aleister Black, who you literally, you know that, hey, if you met this guy in a nightclub or in a back alley and you upset him, he's going to kick your ass. And so people like that come to mind. But also, when it comes to what makes sports entertainment special, to me, the quintessential sports entertainer was Macho Man Randy Savage. From the look, from the wardrobe, to the interview style. But once that bell went, well, you know what happened with him and Ricky Steamboat at WrestleMania 3 and so many other legendary matches. He was an amazing performer. And I think someone who perhaps, and I, of course, I don't want to compare anybody to anybody else. You are the first you. But this kid, the Velveteen Dream, 22 years of age, my man. Not only has he fully embraced his character, but boy, this guy is a sponge. An incredible study, and we saw what he was able to do against the likes of the aforementioned Aleister Black, and just his composure, just the way he presents himself. And he's a throwback in the sense that, you know, I don't spend every day with him, but every time I see him in Orlando at a taping or a takeover event, this guy lives his so-called gimmick 24/7. And I think that can only serve him well as he continues to gain valuable experience. But I could go down the entire roster. There's a reason everyone is there. We have Ricochet now joining us, who,
yes,
when I was calling New Japan, blew my mind. And I think he is going to make a huge impact in NXT and then on the main roster. But look at the women's division and how it's been in a constant transition now with the dominant Asuka moving up, and she of course faces Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania with her undefeated streak. But I love what Ember Moon has done. I love Shayna Baszler, you guys.
Oh,
Shayna
Baszler, yes.
Who I called her fights in MMA, and we used to talk about sports entertainment with Josh Barnett, and I was thinking, well, maybe, darn, it's too bad that, you know, okay, she's in MMA and she's now in her 30s. Maybe that ship has sailed her, you know, sailed by her. But no, again, an incredible student of the game and someone that has brought a unique element of legitimate badassery, if that's a word, to NXT. So, guys, there's so many people who I believe are destined for incredible careers. But the more I am with NXT, the more the brand continues to grow, the more I think you're going to have eventually, and I mean this, you eventually will have Raw and SmackDown superstars going, man, I might want to head over to NXT and see what the lay of the land is there. I truly believe that NXT will eventually get to that point.
Great stuff. Maura, I could go 4 hours with you. I know they're going to give me the hook like the Apollo Theater any second now, but you've been so generous of your time. I don't know if you can do this in a minute or less, but I wanted to give you the platform on the way out. You've been such an advocate for mental health, the bipolar rock and roller. So many people connect with your story. Is there one moment when you connect with a fan or somebody in the business where it makes it all worth it, how open and honest you are?
It's every day, Brian. It's truly 24/7, and I do appreciate you not only asking the question, but I'm going to try to make this in 60 seconds or less. But all of my employers, and of course you wonder, well, should you be honest with what's happening in your personal life? And I believe that we need to be more honest with ourselves in all walks of life. You see what's happening now with the NBA and Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan, in the entertainment industry with people like Selena Gomez, Demi Lovato, a lot of rappers now even rapping about their mental health. And for me, this business, sports entertainment, again, 52 weeks on the road for many of these superstars, and I can't tell you how many of them have come up to me and said that they are inspired by little old me and my willingness to be very open about my mental health advocacy. And guys, there is a reason I am so passionate, and I am maybe even manic right now and talking to you guys, because the only time I truly feel like I am worth anything, the only time that I truly feel alive, is when I have a headset on and I'm ringside at an NXT event or a Showtime Championship boxing event or a Bellator MMA event. And I want to thank everyone who has ever paid me a cent to live my dream, because all of them have supported me. And in fact, just to show you how special my working relationships are, I am under contract to Showtime Championship Boxing, and they have an event on April 7th. I will not be at the event on April 7th because I will be calling NXT TakeOver New Orleans as part of WrestleMania weekend. The only reason that I'm going to be there is because Showtime, in its support of the documentary about my career, my battle with mental health, know the significance and know what it means for me to be a part of WrestleMania weekend and for me to ringside. So I want to thank Stephen Espinoza, David Dinkins, everyone at Showtime for helping me realize my dream of being a part of WrestleMania weekend in a big way with NXT TakeOver, and allowing this kid from Abbotsford, BC, a guy who wasn't supposed to be where I am, who probably is not even supposed to be here, you guys. I just want to thank everyone for their support. And believe me, this is just the beginning. If all I'm recognized when all is said and done is being an advocate for mental health, then I'm a happy person, because if I can save one life, and we've lost way too many, including almost my own. I've been there. I've looked at the ceiling to see if the light fixture could hold the rope, because I've been at the end of my rope. But now I want to bring forth a message that mental health, mental illness may be a life sentence, but it doesn't have to be a death sentence. And the good times are going to be rolling in New Orleans WrestleMania yes. weekend, and I hope everyone's a part of it on the WWE Network.
Mauro, I think I speak for a lot of people when I say you're exactly where you're supposed to be.
I appreciate that, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mauro, for your openness. Thank you for being you, man. I mean, we play this sound drop all the time, but you're the strong style of combat sports.
This is strong style. This is Kota Ibushi.
Oh, that's my favorite right there, and so are you, Mauro. Thank you so much for joining us. We can't wait to hear the call, NXT TakeOver New Orleans.
And I appreciate the support. Love what you guys are doing, Brian. You've always been a tremendous, not only talent, but a friend. And I know, you know, we also share the boxing love. And again, what kind of a life do I lead that I go from being in front of nearly 80,000 at Principality Stadium in Cardiff for the first unification heavyweight title fight in England between two undefeated champions this Saturday, Anthony Joshua and Joseph Parker on Showtime, to exactly 7 days later being a part of one of the biggest NXT events ever, TakeOver New Orleans. So bless you all, and thank you for your, you know, your interest.
Adam, oh, wow. I mean, what else can you ask for? When you talk about passion, you talk about, you know, insightful answers, you talk about being honest and open and bringing it there. I mean, you know, look, I could go on and on about how much I love Mauro Ranallo, but you just heard it right there.
Yeah, I mean, if someone had 30 minutes and needed to learn what Mauro Ranallo is all about, I think we just gave it to you. The highs, the lows, the emotions, the excitement. I mean, I'm like I said, I wasn't lying in the interview. My adrenaline's kind of pumping because I was tired coming into work today. I don't drink coffee. I only drink water and stuff like that. So I just was down in the dumps kind of. And man, he was on the phone for 2 minutes and I was jacked right up. I was ready to go.
I know we have the catchphrase of performance enhancing audio, but I mean, I think
Mauro Ranallo is if there was a dictionary. And it had performance-enhancing audio. The picture of Mauro Ranallo is right there next to it.
Look, he mentioned in his answer, I wanted to ask him specifically, though, that Andrade Cien Almas, Johnny Gargano match from TakeOver Philadelphia in January might be the best NXT match, you know, we've ever seen. He did sort of reference how good it was, but that might be up there in everything he saw, you know, he's seen. But, I mean, what else could we be unhappy about? The guy covered the full gamut, I mean, of his history right there. That's in-depth. That's some quality stuff. And, you know, his voice in NXT, I mean, we teased it, but it's the perfect marriage. I mean, that's exactly, I can't imagine NXT going forward without him.
It's strange because when you go back and watch SmackDown from, 16 months ago, let's say, you know, more than a year ago, because he left in March, last March, he sounds great, right? Because you love Mauro Ranallo, you love him on the call. SmackDown's more exciting. The product was better, obviously, at the same time. But there's just something about him calling NXT that feels right. It feels like he was made to join WWE and be a commentator in that role. Whereas with SmackDown, it always felt a little, not forced per se, but just not like a nice sweater that you feel warm and it envelops you and it's just the right fit. This feels like the right fit. That one worked. You could go out in that sweater. You know, you wouldn't be embarrassed in public and people would still comment, though, it looks really nice. But now it's like you want to wear the sweater and you want to be fully invested and involved in it. I don't know if that's a good metaphor or not.
No,
I'm trying
it
to
is.
Be like Mauro Ranallo here. I don't think it's working that way.
No. It did sort of paint the picture, and it's interesting. It's like I'm not trying to add more on his plate. I'm not trying to give him more jobs. I mean, look, he had a stretch. We didn't get a chance to get into him with it, but he had a stretch last year in a 4-month stretch where he called an NXT takeover in wrestling for WWE the Anthony Joshua Vladimir Klitschko heavyweight championship fight in England, the best heavyweight championship fight in 15 years, and then a Bellator MMA pay-per-view in Madison Square Garden in New York, and then Mayweather McGregor, which was like the ultimate crossover event of all of them. I mean, this guy's busy as it is, but hearing him talk about the NXT roster and put them over, he might be their best advocate for like advertising their product. Like, I mean, if there's like, I know he does some voiceover, some commercials for them, but get this guy a radio show, get this guy out there to Carnival bark up the product, because man, does he get you fired up.
You're just saying that we're not trying to put more on his plate. That's exactly what you just did. I don't think Mauro needs like a radio show in addition to literally all the other times his mouth is moving in front of a microphone. I think that might be overkill. And look, I don't think we mentioned it really, but Mauro doesn't really do a lot of interviews, especially podcast interviews, especially ones for 30 minutes. And I just feel that we were extremely fortunate to get that opportunity. Certainly the man delivered in every possible way we could have expected. And you're right. He talked so much and he was so passionate about WWE and NXT that we had a whole list of questions ready for him about Anthony Joshua and about Mayweather McGregor fight, what it was like to call that we didn't even get to. And obviously we're going to hope to have him back for that opportunity in the future.
Absolutely. And him being that open and honest about his mental health battles. Look, like he posts a lot of links on Twitter. A lot of them have gotten my attention. A lot of them have opened up my mind, you know, to people in my life that are hurting that I wasn't really noticing. So, you know, Mauro really ahead of the game being that open and honest in that. So it's great to see that WWE has someone who they can really rally behind, who's a public face, you know, for a good cause. So that's great to see. But with the voice of NXT behind us, I want to talk about and talk to the patriarch of NXT, the man who built this foundation, the man who I know I give a lot of credit on the show. I know I want Triple H to book the whole damn territory. I want to talk to Triple H. We call him Paul Levesque once in a while on the show for business purposes, but he's Trips. He's Hunter to us. Enjoy. Paul, great to have you back on. It's always a pleasure. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing wonderful. Thanks so much. Closing in on 2 weeks out from WrestleMania 34 in New Orleans. NXT TakeOver the night before. And Paul, on paper, Mania card is stacked. No other way to say it. But I want to start right there because you look closely at that card. It doesn't take long to see the NXT influence sort of jump off that page, like a who's who of guys who have gone through the system, Performance Center, through NXT to get onto the main roster. So what does that say to you about the impact of this system now that we're 4 years removed from the first NXT Live special on the network?
Yeah, I mean, I think it speaks volumes to the system. I think it speaks volumes that it worked and that it's still working and that it's, I mean, obviously I want it to improve and become better and better, but obviously it worked. You know, pretty much every match on the card at WrestleMania, I think with the exception of maybe one, talent have come through the Performance Center. Talent, a lot of them have gone through NXT. So it's definitely working. The main roster right now is 80% of everyone on the main roster came out of this system. And not only that fact, but the highest level of diversity we've ever had internationally, on every way, on every measurement, highest level of all of that. So it's exciting, and it just kind of puts the stamp on, hey, this worked.
No question about it. I mean, you look at the success of the Performance Center, probably not a coincidence that UFC follows suit with its own Performance Institute. It's a system that sort of cultivates, you know, everything from education to health and longevity. So I'm curious, because you come from prior eras where, you know, the pro wrestling lifestyle outside the ring wasn't all that healthy, and there were a lot of bad endings to that regard. How important in the original vision of this was really to sort of retrain the business and remove those habits and create a new healthy way for this moving forward?
It was, man, it was as much of a focus as anything else. You know, I knew that we needed a system to create new talent, because you could look around and say, like, where are they coming from? It's just not going to happen, right? We have to not to what we do from a television standpoint and a content standpoint and a media standpoint and a PR standpoint and what we wanted it to be. I say this all the time when I'm at the Performance Center. This place, we create the business we want it to be. Doesn't matter what it is right now. Doesn't matter what it was 10 years ago. We're going to make it what we want it to be. I looked at things then, and there were times coming up through this business where it was the greatest thing in the world. And there are times when, you know, you could look at the business and say, man, I just wish things weren't this way, or I wish it wasn't like this, or I wish guys wouldn't do that, or, you know, this is the kind of thing that embarrasses me, that I even work with these other people or are part of this in some way, because it was just what it was. And it was a lot of it on people making choices outside of the business, not the business itself. So that was a huge part of this, is to generate professionals that respected the business as much as it should be respected, that were professionals when they went outside of our world. It's one of the things I'm most proud of. When we have talent, main roster, NXT, anywhere, that go other places, I always get reports back from those people that these are the most professional athletes I've ever worked with. Wow, they were, you know, so great and on every level. And I'm really super proud of that. And when I see the level now of athlete that's here, when I see that level of what they put into this and their health and their well-being and they're taking care of themselves and they rehab and they do all the things they need to do for long careers and they're professionals and they act like professionals and they understand what that means and how to represent themselves and represent the company and the business in general, I'm really proud of the whole thing.
No question about it. And we mentioned how many NXT alumni on this WrestleMania card. A lot of legends, too, including yourself, The Game, making this in-ring return in this much-hyped tag team match involving Ronda Rousey. And look, this is amazing news unto itself to get Ronda on the roster, and I'm sure she's learning on the job in an incredibly accelerated way. So we know from her fighting background to her acting experience, there's got to be portions of this that come natural for her. But which parts have been the most difficult adjustments?
I think the most difficult adjustment, and I will say that from the athletic standpoint, yes. I don't know that I've ever seen anybody pick it up faster other than Kurt Angle. She's an amazing athlete with laser focus, which when there's a goal in front of her and this is what she wants to manage, she is like a machine. You really have to tell her stop, because she will just keep going because she's driven. And that's awesome. I think the most difficult thing is, you know, when you're in the environment of sport, it's tough to then figure out the split between I'm still the athlete, I'm still all those driven things, but now it's about entertainment. So what's the mix between sport and athletics and entertainment? And where do I make that transition? Everything that she does in the fight game, in the MMA world, in the judo world, and all those things, it's one-on-one competition. You're against everybody. This is much more of a, you know, behind the scenes, a team environment. And everything that you do is minimal, right? So you're trying to get the most impact on the minimal movements. The things sometimes that hurt the worst are the things that on TV that you don't even necessarily see, the little movements, the little things that make the difference. And you're trying not to have emotion. You're trying not to show pain or excitement or anything, right? This is totally the opposite. The movements need to be big. The movements need to be spectacular. You need to get the most visual bang for your buck, so to speak. You want it to have the least amount of physical punishment with the most visual impact, so to speak. You want to show every bit of emotion and then some. So it's finding that line. And I think as a performer, she's finding that line between her sort of acting career and sort of her athletic career and kind of blending the two in the middle. But that's kind of the figuring that out part is probably the most difficult part for somebody in her situation.
Certainly, certainly. And we're also, of course, I mentioned you're a big part of this match. And I want to sort of, as a fan of the legacy of the Triple H character, I don't know if this comes across as a compliment or not, but the last 5 years, the short-haired version of Paul, the corporate destroyer, whatever you want to call this version of Triple H, I think it might be the best run of your career, and this no disrespect to the previous versions of yourself. I know even Chris Jericho gets that a lot. This late 40s run for him, some people think is the best. Personally, is that something you'd agree with?
You know, I don't know. I'm having fun, man, and doing this stuff, and maybe that's part of it. Part of this business of being good at it is relaxing to it and just enjoying it. The hardest part is not to play the role, just kind of be the role and to be out there. And there's a freedom and a kind of enjoyability of not pressuring yourself so much and not overthinking everything. I think probably that's where Chris is. I think that's probably where a lot of guys are. Look, I go out, you know, and say for a lot of guys, I think Taker got better at the end of his run. I think Shawn got better by far the second half of his career. Always the unbelievable athlete, but his abilities toward the later end of his career were just, you know, his ability to get emotion out of things was just second to none. You know, I think there's a lot of athletes. I think even Cena's that way. I think Cena's done some of the best things he's ever done in his career later in his career. And there's maybe it's just a comfort level to that, you know. In your mind, you wish you could still physically do the things you could do. I wish I could have figured all that out 20 years ago, but unfortunately you don't, right?
Well, there's been plenty reported and discussed recently about 205 Live. The changes, at least to the fan watching at home, are pretty obvious. Can you speak a little bit to the new direction and Do you see 205 Live now as more of a brand or a show for WWE?
I think it's a work in progress. I think we did the Cruiserweight Classic. It was an excitement and an opportunity. We jumped on making it into its own show, but I don't know that that was totally just kind of thought out in the right way and done in the right way. And I think we made an attempt at it that, you know, Vince will say a lot, the business is like flavors, chocolate, vanilla, right? And not everybody's going to agree on the flavor. So we went in the direction of a certain flavor. We gave them vanilla. People weren't buying the vanilla, so we went back to chocolate. And people are seeming to like that again, right? The great thing about us is we can change on a dime. We can put it in a different direction. And if people don't like something, just keep watching. You know, we're probably going to get you there. We're going to get you to a place that, that works for everyone. So that is the intent. I think 205 is continues to be a work in progress. I'm excited about that opportunity for all the athletes there, because for a lot of them, there was no road in front of them. There was no big path. It was doing what they were doing. This has opened up doors for them. And hopefully it'll continue to grow, much like NXT has. Much like the UK will and all of that. I think there's tremendous opportunity, and I think in some way we're just kind of nicking the surface of where we will be. My vision for all this stuff is 5-10 years down the road, not tomorrow, not 6 months from now. I want to look at all these things as long term, and that growth is exponential.
Speaking of growth, Paul, ton of buzz surrounding this greatest Royal Rumble card, April 27th in Saudi Arabia, featuring the 50-man Royal Rumble. And if the press release is any indication, every top star imaginable, including yourself, taking part. So huge news for Saudi Arabia, for WWE from an international business standpoint. But American fans still clamoring to know, will we see this on the network? And will it take place within the same, let's say, storyline universe of the weekly product, considering we're just a couple months off from the regular Royal Rumble?
Yeah, I think we're still kind of exploring the options on it. It's a little bit of a work in progress. This event sort of came together very, very quickly. And as you brought up, it's 3 weeks after WrestleMania. So as you can imagine, putting on a spectacle like WrestleMania, week-long spectacle of that nature, and then following it up 3 weeks later in Saudi Arabia with a stadium show, it takes some logistic work, and we're still working through all the process. I think you'll see some announcements coming up here as we continue to get further into the card and what the show is and all of that. I think you'll see announcements as to the how, where, and when.
As it points to NXT TakeOver this year, which to a lot of the, let's say, the smart fans, some of them like this just as much or more as Mania. You know, it's on that level for the reputation of the card. What's your proudest moment, whether it's a match or something on this run of NXT that stands out the most, that jumps out as like, not that we made it, but this is exactly the vision. This is it right here. This is what I want this to be.
Man, I just think the whole, it's hard to pick a moment, you know, there's, because it all kind of just, it was like this avalanche of stuff happening, and it kept all rolling and going, and it just keeps getting bigger, and that's great. If I had to pick one thing that I'm the most proud of, is that it continues to roll. When we did the first takeover, and then we had a series of call-ups, and we lose talent, like everybody said, this is the fatal flaw. You guys are done. And I tried to say then, I don't think it's the flaw. I think it's the strength. It's on us to recreate. It's on us to keep it fresh, and it's on us to make it exciting. And I believe that the talent can do that. And it's just positioning and new and all that. And it does. It keeps the brand fresh. Almost every year, it's funny, almost every year I sit as we begin to go through the process of all the different artwork and all the different marketing tools and stuff that kind of filter through my world on a daily basis. And we look at the stuff from the year before, it's like a different roster, top to bottom, you know, like almost all of the talent that were on the takeover are gone. And our performing on the main roster now. You know, and it's been that way every time. When we went to Brooklyn the year later, we went back to Brooklyn, and it was a different roster. And I think it's that is the exciting part to me, that we've been able to keep it rolling. Does it have ebbs and flows? Absolutely. When we lost the entire women's division except for Asuka, did it take us a little bit to reboot it? Absolutely. But that's the exciting part, is watching that evolution, watching the talent grow and become something more. So to me, that's the thing, that it just keeps moving forward and recreating new talent and creating new opportunities and just continuing to feed the roster and the brand and most importantly, feeding our fans, which to me, that's the other thing. Like, if you're our most passionate fan base, are the fans that love NXT. Our most passionate fan base are the people that can't get enough of in-ring product, no matter what we do, no matter who it is, no matter what it is. They just love sports entertainment in general. And when we can keep feeding that passion, that to me is the most exciting.
And Paul, the close here, you talk NXT, you talk passion. You got to be talking our guy on this podcast, Mauro Ranallo. We love what he brings to the brand. What have you loved about adding him to it?
Mauro is phenomenal. I love working with people that are passionate about what we do. Mauro wears that passion on his sleeve. I love watching Mauro call matches. We have, when we're producing the show, you know, we have all these different camera angles in front of us. And one of the things that we have is like a little camera, so I can see the announcers. And I can, so if I'm talking to them, they can say things back and forth, but we can see each other. And watching Mauro call, I'd love to put a camera on Mauro and just have you watch him. He is like the most enthusiastic fan in the arena. He is out of his seat. He's on the edge of his seat. He's jumping up. He's, you know, I mean, I wouldn't want to sit next to him, as he probably end up beating you up the whole night, but he's just so passionate about it, and I love that. And that passion comes through on the air. You know, he's JR was back in the day, or anybody else. That's the soundtrack to the time and the kind of the emotion of what's happening in the ring. And Mauro just brings that emotion and that to that soundtrack that very few can bring. He does his job extremely well, and I love working with him just because he is so passionate about it, and I love that. That's just invigorating to me.
We have loved it as well. Paul, great catching up with you. WrestleMania 34, April 8th, New Orleans, NXT TakeOver the night before. Just two parts of what is a loaded weekend wrestling Super Bowl. Thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you guys very much.
Adam, the boss, the man with the plan there. Look, you know, he put over the product well in terms of its impact, especially pointing towards WrestleMania 34 this year. But say what you will about that. Go look at the card at WrestleMania 34. It's got the PC and NXT stamp all over it. We're now at a point, you know, 5.5 years into NXT, 4 years since the first NXT live special on the network, where this is almost at a graduation point, that it's not like this is the portion of the roster from NXT, this is the portion of the roster, you know, from that generation before. That generation before has now gone away. The future is NXT, whether you think that's a cliche or not.
No, you're right. And I think a lot of people forget, because these guys were all on NXT really before the TakeOver, you know, and the arrival specials on WWE Network started. But like, Roman Reigns is in the main event of WrestleMania, has been in the main event of WrestleMania. This is an NXT, you know, WWE Performance Center talent. Seth Rollins as well. Dean Ambrose obviously injured, but The Shield came in. That was really the opening salvo, right? From the actual Performance Center. These are guys who are going to be the next generation of WWE superstars, and you're seeing them all over this card. There's an opportunity that by the time WrestleMania has come and gone, that an NXT guy is Universal Champion, WWE Champion, certainly if Nakamura wins, even though we know he had a storied career elsewhere, Intercontinental Champion, US Champion, and we can go down the line. So it just goes to show that this thing has been a massive success, maybe even exceeding expectations a little bit from Triple H himself.
And I know you couldn't come out and say, look, I love Triple H because he gives it to you clean. If you ask an intelligent question, you know, he's going to give you an intelligent answer for the most part. Now, he punted a little bit talking about Greatest Royal Rumble. We'll give him a pass on that because they don't seem to have all their ducks in a row. But you went at him about 205 Live in a good way. And I know you can't come out and say, hey, Trips, now that you're on the book, it seems like things are a lot better. But that's essentially what you're saying in the way you presented that. And, man, does it really feel like there's a bright future for that brand. I mean, we talk about this every week, but come on, WWE. You know, let's start with 205 Live. We got NXT. Maybe let's let Paul walk a little bit further down that line.
I did find his answer interesting because we know that Triple H is not really going to get inside baseball totally on this podcast or really in public at all about the inner workings of WWE creative, as much as we would love to have an hour with him talking about every creative decision that's ever been made over the last 5 years, right? But he did give an answer, and he used the ice cream flavors and Vince McMahon's metaphor as the example. And I found it interesting what he used, because chocolate and vanilla, which is what he discussed, are drastically different. Whereas if you get like some cookie dough, right, a couple little pieces, and it's just slightly changed, maybe enhanced a little bit better, you would think that's what you would want WWE to do when they start 205 Live and bring those guys into Raw.
Yeah.
But no, he's right. They turned vanilla to chocolate, and now Triple H has turned the chocolate back into vanilla, which is maybe the most popular ice cream flavor,
well,
right?
You know,
and that's why it's working so well.
I think it's working so well because he's putting the flavors on, like you said, because look, CWC, my favorite thing in the world, Cruiserweight Classic, is extreme in one direction. There's not a lot of storyline development outside of like Daniel Bryan's connection with Brian Kendrick, and they're building up that. It's more about this is a shoot fight between guys who are fighting for jobs, and that's why it was so good. And then Vince McMahon flips that on its head and is like, no, we have to give each of these people the direct different gimmick that has to be, you know, I'm the funny Englishman, I'm the this, I'm the dumpster, I'm the drozy, I'm the garbage man, I'm gonna repo your car, I'm gonna be a plumber with polka dots. You know, we got to go down that road again, where hopefully Paul steps in the middle, and he has, it seems, and just says, no, let's blend it together, but let's put the spotlight on the right element, and that obviously is the workers. Adam, I sometimes have made comments on this podcast, and the ghost of Nick Costos used to get mad at me, but if you and I right now, which we're not going to do, we're going to give a power rankings of who we think the best workers in WWE are, I'm going to have a bunch of cruiserweights in my top 10. I mean, that's the true fact. That's what they do.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd have a bunch. I would definitely have a couple. The high-flying aerial moves, as much as I do like them, they don't necessarily take precedence for me over a strong style or solid ground game or just the plethora of different styles that someone like Daniel Bryan or Sami Zayn or Kevin Owens can work. So, yes, these guys are on there. Mustafa Ali and Cedric Alexander, there's no question to me that they deserve, in non-kayfabe, to be in this title match and to have this opportunity at WrestleMania. But what I've taken away most from the reintroduced edition of 205 Live post Enzo Amore, let's say, is the tournament format works. It works in New Japan. It works in WWE. You know, I've been advocating for King of the Ring to return in WWE for a while. In my opinion, BC, and tell me what you think if you agree, they need to have a cruiserweight tournament every single year and basically have the winner become the number one contender and fight at WrestleMania, because this is the best of what 205 Live has ever been. And it's very similar, as you said, to what the Cruiserweight Classic was.
Yeah. So that's a fair idea. I think you could even take that idea and maybe change a couple of things. Like I've said, look, you know what they should do, which they kind of did in 2016. Present the Cruiserweight Classic as an annual event, really opposite the G1. If New Japan is in some tiny form a competitor for you, depending on how much, you know, WWE recognizes them as a competitor, the best thing that they have got going for the year outside of Wrestle Kingdom is that G1 tournament. It's like 4.5, 5-star match after another. Imagine a world where WWE says, all right, we're going to do a Cruiserweight tournament, Cruiserweight Classic every single year. It's going to be presented the same way in that arena with the flags of your country. Not so much about storyline. In fact, Adam, if they took it outside of the actual storyline of WWE and just said this is a tournament for the best wrestlers in our company, and maybe even drop the cruiserweight gimmick, mind you. Imagine if it was just open. Imagine if it was just who our best workers are going to come in here, and it's going to be storyline different from the company, but it's still going to light up your WWE network and draw ratings. Man, that would be, I mean, that's really what the G1 is, right? I know there's a prize at the end of the rainbow for the G1. And again, you can put a prize like you just mentioned, but to have a tournament every year that showcases your best workers, and like, it's just, come on, WWE, you do give us everything else. I mean, there's something for everyone on the network, for an example. Let's have that as one of the menu options.
Did you notice at the end of that interview that he kind of teased something with the United Kingdom division?
Yeah, but I don't think that's ever moved me, that idea. Because didn't originally they wanted to go in the UK and sort of become a promoter there, become a factor, have a TV show, have a title? Like, obviously, they've pressed pause on that plan, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of become a de facto NXT title a little bit now, you know, being defended or at least having the champion compete at takeovers and NXT live events and having a lot of the other British guys do that. But I believe the initial thought in their mind was create the title, create some type of performance center, a mini version up there, and run shows and run TV. And I think they needed to find maybe a cheaper way to do it. But the way he kind of alluded to it at the end there really made me think that something may well be happening in May, June, July, August. You know, maybe a lot sooner than we think, at least regarding the United Kingdom.
What I don't need, though, and there's nothing against it, I don't need another weekly show. I don't need a UK weekly show with like Mandrews and Mustache Mountain. And like, it's already, I put them on 205 or NXT. There's already too much going on my TV. I haven't even caught up and watched Strong Style Evolved NJPW yet, which is almost sacrilege for where I stand on this line side of the revolution. But there's a lot to watch every week. Come on.
By the way, I called for the death of 205 Live for months. And I cannot miss an episode now.
So good.
Like, I know I'm going back. We went from 205 to UK, but I wanted to bring it up before we close because we don't often talk about 205 Live for an extended period of time on the show. You know, BC, I was hammering you. I was like, you got to stop watching this. You're wasting your time. You were complaining about it. I'm like, they need to cancel this show and keep the best guys and move on. I don't feel that way anymore.
No, they're doing the right thing. And what I did like during that stretch, by the way, was though that it was, you don't have to think when you're watching it, but in a good way. They put out really good 22-minute matches in front of you, three per show, and it was just like, watch these guys who never get shine go out there and entertain you. But like, yeah, they're going in the right direction. I mean, look, what Trips has done with NXT has made it arguably the best promotion. When we consider NXT a separate promotion, which it's not, but in the WWE world, it almost is. Imagine if 205 Live can flesh out to the best it can be. Are we going to be in a world, Adam, where the smart fans are going to start to say, you know what, 205 and NXT are better than Raw and SmackDown? I mean, Vince going to allow that world, or will that rumbling never get to Vince?
There's already people saying that NXT is better than Raw and SmackDown, and that they are more excited, and I don't agree, but they're more excited for NXT TakeOver WrestleMania weekend than they are for WrestleMania 34 or any other show that's going on. We obviously had publicly on this show a little bit of a back and forth on what we needed to do Saturday night before WrestleMania. And ultimately, I think, at least for me, it was a total no-brainer to go see NXT TakeOver. We're going to discuss that show in greater detail on our go-home show Wednesday before WrestleMania. But BC, for you, how excited are you for TakeOver New Orleans in general?
You know, I'm excited, but I think it's going to be the show that I'm going to be most entertained. So in a raw, organic, different way than even WrestleMania can, right? WrestleMania is that childhood feel, and it's the crowd. I mean, look, the crowd is a big part of what makes WrestleMania so much fun, because you're so anticipated, and that NXT crowd is just different enough. It's even smarkier, and there's a support of the product in NXT. And that's ultimately the difference between the main brand. There's a support of the product that goes deeper than I'm going to boo or I'm going to cheer this guy, I'm going to buy this guy's t-shirt. It's you're cheering for everyone to succeed. And I think that is the little burner, the little hot can underneath that is part of what makes it so good. Plus it's a little bit of the indie style. So this card is loaded. There's so much potential for Underjuice. This might be the highlight of the weekend. I mean, for us, there's no question about it. We are living the dream. I mean, let's not forget, you get fringe benefits when you cover WWE at the highest level. And Adam, we will be living the dream that weekend and sharing our story with everyone else. But that's right up there in our itinerary.
Absolutely. So we just wrapped up, obviously, our first NXT centric episode here of In This Corner. We still have the regular WWE pod coming on Wednesday, and we have a couple surprises for you, both on Wednesday's show and next week leading into WrestleMania, BC.
Oh, wow. You want to, you know, if you want to talk about Triple H or Ghetto as bookers that get a lot of shine on this show, the Silver King as the booker for the special guests that you'll be seeing over the next week on the In This Corner podcast. If this episode wasn't enough to wet your whistle, you got a lot of good stuff coming your way. So get fired up. Follow us on our social interwebs. Hey, do us a solid right now. Follow at In This Corner CBS on Twitter. You don't want to miss what is coming your way. Silverstein, you got two words for the people on the way out?
I could probably come up with two. We're out.